For some reason, I don't really know what the request behind this was, but I was asked to revisit my take on Genesis story about Noah and the Ark. So, we're going to do Noah and the Ark today. It's a long story, so I'm going to read excerpts for you. That's from Genesis 6, 7, 8, and 9. Verses from each of them. Just kind of help us refamiliarize ourselves with the story. And this is all from the New Revised Standard Version. So, hear now these words. These are the descendants of Noah. Noah was a righteous man. Important line. Noah was a righteous man. Blameless in his generation. Noah walked with God. Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now, the earth was corrupt in God's sight. And there was filled with violence. And God saw that the earth was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted its way upon the earth. And God said to Noah, I have determined to make an end of all flesh, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. Now I am going to destroy them along with the earth. Make yourself an ark of cypress wood. Make rooms in the ark and cover it inside and out with pitch. This is how you make it. A length of the ark, 300 cubits, its width, 50 cubits, and its height, 30 cubits. Make a roof for the ark and finish it to about a cubit above, and put the door of the ark in its side. Make it with lower second and third decks. For my part, I am going to bring a flood of waters to the earth to destroy from under heaven all flesh in which is the breath of life. Everything that is on the earth shall die. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall come into the ark, you, your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives with you. And every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring two of every kind into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female, of the birds according to their kind. So that the animals according to their kinds, and every creeping thing of the ground according to its kind, two of every kind shall come in to you to keep them alive. Also, take with you every kind of food that is eaten, and store it up, and it shall serve as food for you and them. Noah did this. He did all that God commanded him, and the waters swelled on the earth for 150 days. They went into the ark with Noah, two and two, all flesh, in which there was the breath of life. And those that entered, male and female, all of the flesh, went in as God had commanded him, and the Lord shut him in. In the second month, on the 27th day of the month, the earth was dry. Then God said to Noah, go out of the ark, you and your wife and your sons' wives with you. Bring out with you every living thing that is with you of all flesh, birds and animals and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, so that they may abound on earth and be fruitful and multiply on earth. So Noah went out with his sons and his wife and his sons' wives and every animal and every creeping thing and every bird and everything that moves on earth went out of the ark by families. And God said to Noah and to his sons with him, as for me, I am establishing my covenant with you and your descendants after you, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the domestic animals, and every animal of the earth with you, as many as came out of the ark, I establish my covenant with you that never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of a flood. And never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth. And God said, this is a sign of the covenant that I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for all future generations. I have set my bow in the clouds, and it shall be a sign of covenant between me and the earth. When I bring clouds over the earth and the bow is seen in the clouds, it will remember my covenant that is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh, and the water shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. When the bow is in the clouds, I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on earth. God said to Noah, this is the sign of the covenant that I have established between me and all flesh that is on the earth. May we have blessing and understanding to the reading of these words.
This song is called The Flood.
Standing on the edge of forever, at the start of whatever, shouting love at the world.
My message this morning is entitled Arks of Refuge in a World of Floods. As a child, I remember the Noah's Ark story being one of my favorite stories. I remember this very specifically. I could pass hours drawing pictures of a large boat with an old man wearing a rain hat hanging over the stern. On a side note, I also have to admit, I also remember even back then being remarkably confused about how Noah actually put all of those animals into one boat when I couldn't even think of all of the animals, more or less draw them on my sheet of paper. If we think about it, we all typically really love this story. I mean, children's rooms across the U.S. are decorated with animals, and arcs, and rainbows, all painted in vibrant pastels. Somehow there is something comforting about it. Somehow there is something beautiful in the promise for the future captured in an acrylic rainbow that has been painted in exaggerated arts just above the baby's crib. I have to say, my perspective has changed considerably since my somewhat naive childhood. As I come to these texts again, the reality of the chaos in them comes crashing through with every imagined wave. This is the point at which I think I need to warn you, if you love the Noah's Ark story, my message today might be a bit difficult to listen to. This is not a pretty story. Now, the good news is, in the end, it does have some very valuable lessons in it for all of us. Place this story in modern times. What would a newspaper headline be? One noted reporter penned this headline for the Noah flood event. It said, "God destroys the world. One family survives." Sounds like the perfect shell rail border for a little time. We hear about it. God destroys the world. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Look at the flood event. Looking at it from a more analytical perspective, that gave me a sort of new insight about how horrifying this story really is on multiple levels. Let's just start with God. Except for Adam and Eve and the apple tree, up until this point in the text, God has only given humanity one commandment other than the apple tree. Go forth and multiply. Really, you can read the first five chapters of Genesis. Go forth, once we get past the apple tree, go forth and multiply. That's it. There is no thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not cover your neighbor's wife, or not even the don't eat shellfish. So, seemingly, even when humanity has basically done what they were told to do, go forth and multiply, God condemns all of humanity except for one family. If you look at the text in its entirety, you can even reasonably make the argument, and some scholars have, that God's actions seem very unlike God. God doesn't like the way people are acting, even though they have never been given anything by which to measure what God expects of them. So, without much of a warning, God reaches into the sky, opens the drain that holds back the deluge, and goes home. No warning, except for telling his best friend, "You might want to build a boat." Now, if that wasn't uncomfortable enough, after it is all said and done, after countless humans and animals spin and whirl in the chaotic waters of the flood, and their bloated bodies finally come to rest in what must have been some horribly unspeakable places, God seems to regret what has happened, saying, "I promise, I will never, ever do it again. Look, I made you a rainbow." The reality of the chaos comes crashing through with every imagined wave. Now, the way that I see it, Noah is no better off in this story. Noah, according to the text, the one person in the entire face of the planet who, according to the scripture, was found to be righteous, has a conversation with God. God says, you should build a boat. I'll send some rain. A whole lot of rain. Enough to wipe out everything except for you and your family and a few of every animal. Now, what does Noah do? Well, by the judgment of God, Noah was the only righteous person on the planet. So presumably, being righteous, Noah argues to save innocence like Abraham did with God for the lives of the people of Sodom and Gomorrah, right? Wrong. No. Noah builds an ark, crams millions of varied species into it, and follows his family onto the ship as God closes the rest of the world out, leaving them to deal with the chaos that was to follow. It is at this point that the reality of the chaos comes crashing through with every imagined wave. It must have been horrifying as the rest of the world came to grips with the reality of what was happening. The floodgates had opened. Crazy old Noah wasn't looking so crazy anymore. Here's the thing. Can you imagine sitting on the inside of that boat and doing nothing? The horrific screams of friends and neighbors, the crackling of fingernails, bending back on end, trying to pry into the one place of refuge in the chaos of the world. Can you imagine sitting on the inside of the boat and doing nothing? I can't. The headline would read, God destroys the world, one family survives. Now that, my friend, could make some baby room. Swirls of water painted in deep blues and black, each wave delicately decorated with the slowly swelling body of one of the millions who did not make it. Resting heavily on the wall just over the crib is a monstrosity of a boat completely closed in, and along the edges of the door are the traces of the fingernails of those who never made it onto the inside of the inside of it. And on the other side of the room, the swells are beginning to subside. Carcasses rest in the trees. Muck and debris are beginning to find less than convenient places, and you begin to think how good it is that you cannot smell what you are looking at. And in the farthest corner of the room, a rainbow. Painted freshly, paint still drips, and under it says, I'm sorry, it won't happen again. The reality chaos comes crashing through with every painted wave. God destroys the world. One family survives. Noah's actions reminds me of so many of the choices that we make as species. Whether it is the Holocaust, slavery, the taking of Native American land, Rwanda before, or Gaza, we continue to make the same horrific choices made by Noah in this flood story. One of the best depictions I can remember of this was in the movie Hotel Rwanda. It's a movie made in 2005 if you haven't seen it. And if you have not seen it, do yourself a favor and stream it. It's fantastic. Let me just very short, briefly set the scene. Rwanda was being consumed in a flood of its own tears and blood of its own people. Diplomats from America and Europe countries who were in Rwanda had done what little they could do to help. They begin to see that the tide is not turning and that the deluge of chaos is about to come crashing through in waves of violence. And in an astounding piece of cinematic brilliance, the diplomats, who are thought to be the righteous, load themselves into a small bus, a bus eerily shaped like an ark, in the middle of a rainstorm. The bus pulls out of the oncoming flood without as much as a single Rwandan on it. The reality of the chaos is crashing through with every wave of violence. Genesis 9, verse 11, God said, "Never again shall all flesh be cut off by a flood." But even now it happens. A flood of hatred cut off the Jewish people, a flood of greed and entitlements cut off the American Indians, a flood of arrogance and unjustified superiority cut off millions of Africans who were forced into slave trade, a flood of tears and blood washed away millions of Rwandans, a flood of misogyny allows physical, financial, and psychological violence towards women to continue on mostly unchecked. A flood of ignorance, fear, and hatred constantly destroys LGBTQ+ lives. And a flood of racism takes the lives and livelihoods of people of color every day. And all too frequently, Christians find themselves playing the role of Noah, gathering our boats of pride, privilege, and presumed superiority. And even worse, we sometimes imagine that in our righteousness that God has entitled us to it and closes the door behind us for our protection. And a sort of divine seal of approval of a lack of action. Now, I said the good news is that there are lessons to be learned from this flood story, and there definitely are. Probably a few things that make us a bit uncomfortable, admittedly, but are very helpful for humanity in the long run. In the flood story, we do have a God acting in some ways unlike God. But you see, at this point in this story, God hasn't been dealing with this creation thing very long. And as you might imagine, we humans can be a bit ornery and difficult to manage. If you've never had children, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Think of it this way. From the Bible's perspective, we are made in the likeness of God. So if we have to learn how to handle something new, why couldn't it also be the case that God does too? And in this story, he's trying to figure out how to handle these humans. I mean, in the end, God regrets that the flood happened, promising to never do it again. Well, what is regret if it is not, at least in part, the result of learning? I regret that I made those choices that I made, and I've learned something from it, and I won't do it again. In the Noah story, God learned that destruction was not the solution. As a matter of fact, the Hebrew word for the bow that God hangs in the sky has nothing to do with rain. It is the word that's used to describe a warrior's bow. God hung destruction in the sky, in the spot where the destructive rains came from. It's a declaration that destruction is not the way, that violence is not the way, that in the end, it is love that wins. The thing to never lose sight of is that in all of it, in God's anger, disappointment, regret, response, and promise, in all of it, God has one underlying desire. God wants the world to be saved. Today we see far too many preachers and politicians who claim to be Christian who clearly have not learned the lesson that destruction and violence are not the way. We've seen churches rattling off guns, politicians talking about punching their opponents. If we wish to claim the moniker of Christian, we must learn that violence is not the way, that love is. As Dr. King put it, hate begets hate, violence begets violence, toughness begets a greater toughness. We must meet the forces of hate with the power of love. We can also learn from Noah, the one righteous person left. No one ever went to God on behalf of those who were suffering through the floods. Noah was disengaged from the world, He had built this amazing ark designed by the hands of God, and he kept it all to himself and his family. Floods happen on a daily basis in this world. Some are the Rwandas of the world, some are floods of economic oppression, floods of fear, floods of social stigmas, floods of racism, misogyny, xenophobia, homophobia, and even actual floods that devastate entire coastlines and cities as they wash out thousands of lives. I am left to wonder, have we learned the lessons that these stories have to offer us? Do we understand that destruction is not the answer? A life lived as a reflection of God is not about destruction, it is about construction. Building arks of refuge in a world of floods. Did we learn to not shut the world out, but to bring the world in? Can we look into the swirling chaos of today's world and honestly make that rainbow promise, you will not be cut off by the floods. You will survive. I will help to make sure. Has the Christian church become an ark of refuge, or have we huddled into our refuge and assume that God has closed the door behind us? Building arks, surviving floods, rainbow promises. We have to continue to be busy about this. Did we learn not to shut the world out, but to bring the world in? Did we learn from Noah, from Rwanda, that the answer is important? So watch Hotel Rwanda. Then read about places like Darfur and Gaza. Have we learned? Let us become even better at looking into the swirling chaos of today's world and honestly making that rainbow promise. You will not be cut off by the floods. You will survive. I will work to help make it so.
Dangerous times, 'cause you are.
We must admit that we are not always what we want to be. We're not always who we are called to be. We sometimes struggle to reach those lofty goals. Sometimes life overwhelms us. Its storms roll in and we feel overwhelmed. May we learn to turn to each other in those times. There are times when we see others trying to survive the storms of life as well. And all too frequently we pass them by believing that we can barely help ourselves more or less someone else. May we learn that we are all together on this boat called life. And that our strength is in our numbers, our strength is in our community. May we learn to build up rather than tear down. May we learn of the promises the story of Noah tells us. Promises that remind us that the storms of life do not have to overwhelm us. Promises that no matter how many times we fall short of being the people we are called to be, there is hope in the love of God. May we extend that love to each other, and particularly to those who are called up in the faith. floods of life. Amen. Receive this blessing. May you walk in harmony with each other and with creation, recognizing that we are one. And may you know love and happiness throughout your life. And may your words and your actions share that love and happiness with all of those you meet.
Also, by Derek Webb, who will be performing here on November the 15th. I'm so excited about it.
My God and Father, while I stay, you are from my home. Thank you.